Hi, and welcome to the Macro Show. We talk macro, and you wonder what is causing this huge surge in consumer borrowing. We've got that Fed meeting minutes, TLT short interest, crude oil inventory data. We've got it all. Let's get right into our headline story. What is going on? We've got the consumer credit report from the Fed for February. Here it is. Total outstanding debt up $27.6 billion. That is a monster of a number. You can see it right here. This is, if you're wondering how to look this up, this is the G.19 report. Now, revolving debt, this would be, think of things like credit cards, home equity lines, things where payments can change. Now, these are up $8 billion. But look at this. Non-revolving debt up a massive $20 billion. Now you kind of say, well, what is non-revolving debt? Well, it includes motor vehicle loans and all other loans not included in revolving credit, such as loans for mobile homes, education, student, that would be student loans, boats, trailers, vacations. These loans may be secured by an asset or unsecured. So you have a massive amount of borrowing that we're not seeing in the normal H.8 data. So what's going on here? Well, I want to get into the economic data because there's something kind of interesting in the mortgage lending data that I think might add some clarity to what's going on. But first, let's get to some of the economic data and we'll catch up to this. We'll come back to this. So we've got Redbook, same store weekly retail sales down 17.2%. And this is a problem with how Redbook calculates their report. We have found out that it is due to the fact that stores need to be open for 12 months or more. So the year-over-year rate changes up to 10.6%. I'm really curious to see what the month-over-month, and what's weird about the month-over-month data is it's pretty consistently negative here. I mean, you would think something would, you know, jump, but it hasn't. So until the series gets back where it is, I'm not sure we could put a lot of credibility in the month-over-month data. Now, the job openings and labor turnover survey, this is former Fed chair, now the Treasury of Secretary, Janet Yellen's favorite indicator, her macro indicator, is because it shows the number of job openings. And here we can see there are 7.367 million job openings. And if you go back and look, it's matching almost near the cycle highs. I mean, it's right off where we were within the last year. So this is telling us that there's a ton of jobs out there. At the same time, there's a lot of people unemployed, a lot of people still filing unemployment. So this really doesn't make a lot of sense to me is, you know, why are there so many job openings if people aren't working? Are they happy being on unemployment? Are they okay? Is that the game, is just stay on unemployment and don't go look for a job because it pays better? Are these low wage jobs? I'm not entirely sure, because the survey just tells you that there's a lot of job openings. And it does break down by sector, which tells us there are quite a few of these jobs that are part-time jobs. But overall, it tells you there's a massive amount of jobs. And that kind of goes to the next question is, does that mean wages are going to go up? Because that's really where you get inflation. Someone asked this, do you know where wage inflation is at? And here it is, real personal incomes. If you exclude government transfers, so, you know, these one-time stimulus checks that keep repeating, is down 2.5% on a year-over-year basis. So what we have seen kind of validates that consumers have less money to spend. That is not inflationary at all. Now, they have more money because of government transfers, but excluding government transfers, wages are indeed down. All right, let's continue on in the economic data, see what we've got. Let's see. Coming into, here we go, the Eurozone. We've got Italian composite PMI, slight expansion over the prior month at 51.9. So not a lot of stuff going on in Italy. How about France? Unchanged. So no change in the French composite PMI. How about Germany? The expansion continues there from virtually no expansion in February to, you know, a decent expansion of 57.3 on their composite PMI. So we're seeing the German economy, at least from the manufacturing services sector, start to rebound. How about Great Britain? Their composite PMI went from virtually minor, very slight contraction, I mean, super, super slight, virtually unchanged in February, to a decent expansion of 56.4. So we're seeing, you know, some improvements in the British economy. But here's one of the conundrums as we get back to that consumer credit data. And this mortgage applications are now down another 5.1%. So if we look at the mortgage market index from the peak, mortgage applications are down more than 30%. So it's kind of interesting. You see, okay, there's this blowout borrowing in February when we got a Chicago Fed National Activity Index, which pointed was a recessionary print, said, hey, look, the economy's in a recession. So you get this massive amount of borrowing in non-revolving debt. So you're, again, think car loans, five-year loans, shorter-term loans. At the same time, mortgage applications are falling. So what is that telling you, you know, about where consumers are at? Well, it's telling you they're rejecting higher interest rates on the long end of the curve. They're saying, look, these long-term mortgage rates, they're too high. And what do people do when interest rates are favorable in the housing market? Well, they either move, right? They move up, buy a newer home, a more expensive home, and they can keep the payments nearly the same. Or they pull equity out, right, and keep their payments nearly the same. Or they refi to a lower payment. But what happens when rates are too high? Consumers say, no, I'm not interested in that. And next thing you know, applications fall not only for new homes, but for refinances. So it's telling you from an economic standpoint, consumers are rejecting longer term interest rates. Now, what are they doing with their money? Well, they're borrowing at the short end of the curve where rates are lower. Now, this is interesting to me because what did we see in the bond market today? What was the reaction to that consumer credit report? Well, it was already trending down. You know, the QE kind of runs early in the morning. You get this QE boost, and it kind of ran down. And here you can see the consumer credit report. And the market interpreted this as bearish for long-term bonds, which it actually isn't bearish for long-term bonds at all. You would arguably say it's bullish for long-term bonds because consumers are rejecting long-term rates and saying, look, I can afford maybe, you know, a higher car payment or buy a nicer car or, you know, whatever their, you know, a student loan seem maybe are people borrowing a lot of student loans in February? That I don't know. That seems a little odd to me, but maybe it's true. So what you're seeing is consumers are biasing toward where rates are the lowest, not where they're the highest. So to me, from the long bond perspective, that would be bullish because consumers are saying, look, rates need to come down. Where's our down arrow here? And on the short end of the curve, you think that, say, that pushes rates up a bit because consumers are saying, yeah, hey, we're cool borrowing at the short end of the curve. That's how you look at supply and demand in the bond market. But of course, it's going to be interpreted across the curve as bad for the bond market. Let's take a look at exports and imports. Now, why do I like exports and imports is because they tell you if the economy is growing or not. I mean, it really does. So here we see exports have actually fallen a little bit and imports have fallen a little bit. And keep in mind, the trade balance is now the largest in history, but let's look at exports. So you can see exports peaked, looks like in May, or not May, good grief, in March. And here we are in April on this print. And you can see, so you see that nice little peak there, kind of starting to roll over. So it's telling you that exports out of the U.S. are slowing down despite these hot factory manufacturing PMI prints. But how about from an import perspective? They're also telling you imports are slowing. So it's telling you there's less demand for consumers. Now, unfortunately, these don't zoom out any further so we can see, but it tells you when these things peak and slow down, it's a pulse of the consumer. It's a pulse of the global economy, because if the global economy is growing, right, what are you going to see? Exports rising, imports rising. You're going to see it all around the world. Mainly in the largest importing country in the United States, you want to see rising imports because it tells you there's consumer demand. But when you see them start to flatten out or roll over, it's telling you the economy is not expanding the way everyone thinks it is. All right, let's go on to crude oil. So we saw crude oil, there was a bit of a draw. The market was expecting that 3.5 million barrels. The market was expecting a drop of 1.4 million. But what the market wasn't expecting was gasoline inventories to jump 4 million barrels, nor was it expecting distillate stocks to jump nearly 1.5 million barrels. So what's going on here? Well, refinery runs are up a little bit. But last week was a holiday week, and what do most people do on holidays? They travel. They drive, they go see family, they go places, they travel. So what do you normally expect from, say, the gasoline and distillate data. You expect it to go down. I mean, that's what you would expect. You expect all this demand, and yet we didn't see that. So is it partially because the economy in some areas is shut down? Well, the economy is about 72% reopened, but that didn't stop people from potentially driving. So to me, there's a real demand and supply issue here. Supply was up a little bit, but demand fell. And now here we're coming back into this week, which is, you know, a normal week, not a non-holiday week. So more people are going back to work, more businesses are reopening. And this is not what the oil market wants to see in terms of demand. Now, what this tells me potentially is there is a dollar shortage and people just aren't out spending as much despite the government transfers. There's uncertainty there as people maybe hang on to their checks because despite the government telling them, hey, there's 7.3 million jobs out there and you need to go get one, well, they don't seem to feel confident enough to be spending their money as we see here. Taking out loans, yes, but not so much else. How about the FOMC meeting minutes? So let's explain what the Fed does. The Fed uses its minutes. So now normally when there's a meeting, right, you go to a meeting, someone takes the minutes and then they're distributed, you know, typed up, distributed later. Well, the Fed uses them as a way to fix mistakes. So what's odd about this last Fed meeting is Powell said, look, we're not going to raise rates or tighten monetary policy until we see inflation over 2%, sustained inflation over 2%. And then literally the day after and the days following, there were Fed speakers out the wazoo as everyone panicked. It's like, okay, the Fed's going to start raising rates sooner than we think. And the reason people are having that interpretation is because due to the base effects of the economy shutting down, we're going to see potentially 3 months of higher inflation. And then you're going to see it roll over and head down in July, assuming nothing changes. Assuming, you know, my view on the monetary system is completely wrong, you will see this anyway. So it's possible, due to the liquidity trap, the rise in the CPI won't be as much as it normally would have been. But nevertheless, some people believe, according to the data, or their data, that we're going to see a boost of the headline CPI over 2%. Which would then mean the Fed's going to say, oh, hey, we made it over 2%. And the Fed's saying, no, look. We mean sustained inflation over 2%. So how do they fix that in the minutes? Well, the minutes come out a month later, and the Fed goes in there, and they clean them up. All right, what did Steve say? Yeah, he didn't really say that. And we'll put in, oh, look, he changed his view, and that's how they fix it. So that way, what the minutes are showing us is a behind-the-scenes view of the Fed, not necessarily what, you know, Powell said at the press conference. So that gives the Fed the opportunity to clean up their mistakes. If you don't think that's true, it is entirely true. Now, of course, the other thing we saw in the meeting minutes is they think they're eventually going to hit their inflation target. Well, I guess the good thing is they always think they're going to hit it. The bad thing is they pretty much never do. So the market always believes what the Fed tells them, even when the Fed is historically wrong for years and years and years on end. But the Fed is very clear, look, we're not going to do anything until we hit our inflation targets and we're sustained over it. And don't worry about the short term, because we already know, and so do you, that look, it's going to get probably go over 2%, but we know it's not going to stay there. By July, this thing is going to roll over and head much lower. So last thing I've got for you is some TLT short interest, and we'll take a look at a chart of TLT along with that. And here it is, bets against bonds. TLT short interest rises the highest level since 2017. So telling you that 20% of all people holding TLT are short. And that's huge. So you have to go back to early 2017. So let's pull up the TLT chart here. And we will zoom out to early 2017, which is right in here. And TLT was low. Everyone thought it was going to go. See, big sell down. Everyone said, okay, this thing's going to zero. Interest rates are going to infinity. And lo and behold, other than one more drop, there's a rally here before it went down and then the big rally. So here you have it, massive shorts in TLT, likely leading to, again, lower interest rates, not higher interest rates. And you know, with what's going on with GameStop and all those other things and everybody loving the short position, well, those shorts are going to get squeezed thanks to liquidity trap, thanks to the Fed. And on those notes, I think we crushed it on that Macro Voices interview. Thanks for watching that. Thanks for the great feedback. And I'm glad you all enjoyed that video by Emil Kalinowski. It was a surprise to me too, so I wanted to share it with you. Thanks for being a fan. Thanks for liking. Thanks for subscribing. We'll see you back probably on Friday for the macro show, but I might have a surprise for you tomorrow. I might. We'll see if I get it done in time. I'm Steve Van Meter. Thanks for watching. Thanks for being fans. See you soon. Bye now. The content of this video is provided as educational information only. It's not intended to provide investor advice. This video does not to be considered as a recommendation or solicitation to buy or selling security, financial instrument, or participate in any particular trading strategy. This video was prepared by Steve Van Meter in person capacity. Opinions expressed in this video that do not reflect the view of Atlas Financial Advice, Inc. or Steve Van Meter Financial.